Touch the Dragon by Karen Connolly. Diary Entries. September 9th. I've had the same dream for 3 nights now. It's a winter dream, beginning with a man walking down a road into the dark. I see him from a height behind a window. I watch the snow blur cold and silver through the columned light of street lamps, and the glass of my window is too cold to touch. Or maybe it's too hot. In the dream, I know that if I touch it, I'll burn myself. I only stand and watch the man walk away, and he will not turn around to look at me. The soft thud of his feet in the snow is the dream's only sound. It gets louder as the distance between us grows. Somehow, I know that if I push on the window long and hard enough, it will part smoothly under my hands, melt, and I'll be able to get out. But I don't even touch it because of the heat or coldness. If I pressed my lips to the window for just a moment, the man would come back, but out of fear, I don't do it. Instead, I shout his name and wake up. Michael. Even when I don't dream, I wake at night to turn off the overhead fan. During the days, it's sticky and hot. During the nights, it's sticky and cool. The breeze from the fan gets under the sheet and shivers me awake. Outside, Denchi sleeps, though a dogfight in the field has torn away a corner of silence. The quiet returns, lies smooth beneath a whir of insects and frogs. I want to stay awake for this wordlessness. If I cannot have English, let me have this instead. I can understand the silence of sleep, whole in itself, complete. The days themselves are not whole. They are made up of half-eaten words, words left behind, nibbled words, too long and strange to get in my mouth or ears. Everything is the wrong size here. My bones are too big, my mind is too small. I never thought words could fail me, but here they're not even words. They're useless noises, wholly unreliable. Me, Primoa, Kunyi, the children all blink innocently at me, smile and shake their heads. It would not matter how very slowly I said, "Please leave me alone in my room for just 5 minutes." They would not understand. They've lived within 15 feet of each other for most of their lives. They're afraid to leave me alone. I write out of tiredness, loneliness, longing. The danger is not that I'll forget anything I left in Canada, but that I'll remember it too sharply. Loneliness is so ironic when I'm surrounded constantly with new people and their lives. The bicycle rickshaw drivers are anxious to teach me Thai. The children in Nerarit lean over the green terraces and call my Thai names, Kanika, Ploy. They're still very shy, but sometimes when I'm sitting in a little pavilion under the tamarind tree, they appear quietly, cautious as fawns. If I sing something for them, they will sing the morning assembly songs for me, which I want very much to learn. It's a terrible thing to stand in the midst of almost 3,000 singing, praying people when you have nothing to sing or pray yourself. I sway in the waves of so much lucent music, but they wash around me instead of through me because I haven't the key, the language, to let them in. The children are teaching me, and they bring roses to the English room, paper bags of sugared fruit and sweet rice. They're very shy, with black-lashed eyes and a velvet cover over their bones. I'm a rare specimen here. The blonde hairs on my arms astound them because my eyebrows are so black. My long Caucasian nose is an absolute mystery. After touching my skin, they touch their own, trying to name the differences between us. We understand each other primarily through laughter. But laughter is too simple a language for me. If I am happy, I am also miserable, prone to emotion, impatience, self-pity. The place and pace of my life have changed so quickly, it's difficult to recognize all this newness as my own life. I've been made into something completely different in less than a month, because of a long day and night in a plane. In the English room, one of the children's storybooks has figures which unfold upward as the book is opened. The kids are fascinated by it. Ajahn Champa brought it from England. I cannot get the image out of my mind, the flat book flipping open, its magical characters rising straight off the page, the scurry of Thai fingers wanting to touch. Thailand itself has opened like that for me, gone from picture books to tangible form, and I am still surprised. The only trick that isn't available is the one that would unfold Canada into three dimensions. Sometimes I forget this was my choice. I wanted to come here despite what I would leave behind. Apparently, it's on file somewhere, I came here to live and learn in a new culture, to adapt myself to a country very distinct from my own. At the moment, this seems just short of impossible. Even things I know, sunlight on water, fog, cotton trees, a long expanse of green, leave me breathless, as though I've never seen color before. The stars and planets confuse me when I sneak out to the field at night. I turn around and around, slowly, testing angles, trying to chalk together a constellation I can recognize. I want an old image. Instead, what I never expected is suddenly there. I see it, or am seen by it, caught. Yesterday I spotted a praying mantis clinging to one of the outer folds of my green curtain, gazing in my direction with the focused concentration of a tiny silk-green cat. At night, one sheet sleeps over me, and mosquitoes light on my skin. Nothing else, no one, touches me here. After my strange empty dream of snow and hot glass, I don't return easily to sleep. In a place where there is nothing for you, no prayers or songs or even stars, you turn blindly to your body, hug your shoulders in the dark, and touch your own pale arms, amazed. This is how I know I'm alone. My own skin surprises me.